This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
High rents are leaving some households with as little as $80 a fortnight to live on. It's not uncommon at the moment for renters to be spending at least 56% of their wage on rent, and that's if they can find a place to rent at all.
And it doesn't leave you much money to be spending on other things. And it's been labelled rental stress. Is that you? And are you someone who never thought you'd be impacted by rental stress? You have a job, you've always managed to get by, but now you're concerned that bills won't get paid or that you might not be able to find somewhere to live that you can afford.
And is the answer as simple as build more social housing? This is Samantha Ratnam. She's from the Greens, and she was talking about, well, who needs social housing?
Who needs social housing? You know, it really fits with misunderstanding and stereotypes that are often used in this debate. But people who need social housing are all of us. They're my grandparents who live in public housing. They're MPs who spoke yesterday who grew up in public housing. And they're the tens of thousands of Victorians who are experiencing real housing stress, who've been locked out of our exorbitant housing market, who require a safe and secure home to call their own.
But surely we can't provide social housing for everyone, Jono. I mean, with so many of us falling through the cracks, I guess the term is the working poor, you know, just the middle income workers. Are they eligible for social housing? It feels like there is going to be an avalanche of people that technically will be eligible for social housing.
Yeah. And how do we stop that? I mean, what are the solutions there? Because you spoke about public housing, we can't build public housing for everyone. So what do we do about that? How common and how easy is it to find yourself in rental stress? And how can we make renting more affordable?
We're seeing a shift back to employers building homes and providing homes for employees. So is that part of it, or does it need to be something else? What are the solutions to renting stress?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
Texts already coming in, Jono. We've applied for a property last week and we lost out to someone who offered $100 more and 12 months upfront. How can we compete with that? We're spending hours online searching for a home, booking inspections, days attending, packed inspections, knowing that the best bidder will win. Don't get me started on actual online application process. My referees are actually getting fed up with the constant emails and reminders and the online time it's taking for each application. That's just one of the texts that has already come in on this topic.
Yeah, and so many people in this situation, I think including Cheryl from Torquay. Good morning, Cheryl. Can you tell us about your situation?
Good morning. Yeah, so my situation, after separating from my husband, I obviously had to find somewhere to rent. And I was paying $620 a week in rent and I'm earning $900 a week. So that doesn't leave much left over. I do try and do overtime as well to make more money. And I also rent out my caravan to try and make extra money.
Gosh, so you're really already thinking outside the square, aren't you?
Well, you have to, because I have no choice. And most weeks you don't make ends meet, and I have to dip into my house deposit savings. And the reason, obviously, my rent's expensive, I do live on the Surf Coast, and that is a choice, but that's where I've been for the last, I guess, say 10 years. And it's for the stability of my kids. Their father lives in Torquay as well, so they're close by. They ride to their friends' houses. They can also ride themselves to football training because I'm still at work, so they have to get themselves there. And I'm not the only one there. So the house prices and the rent at the moment in our area is just so difficult. And I'm just a middle, you know, kind of income earner, and I work so hard, and sometimes it's like, for what?
Yeah.
You know, Cheryl, you just to survive.
It sounds so stressful, Cheryl. So thank you for talking about it. But I think you're not alone is the point of the program today. But just doing some quick math. So your rent is $620 a week. You earn $900 a week. So that's $280 a week that you've got left. Do you find that you have to make those tough decisions?
With family assistance and rent assistance, I get about $450 a fortnight, so that helps. And then my child support is about $400 a month, so that's an extra $100 a week. We go camping for our holidays. We have picnics and things. We don't overspend. Obviously, if you have takeaway, that's a big treat because I can't afford it. And I'm trying to teach my children about, I have to work a whole hour to pay for,
The fact that you're having to do overtime as well, it really, Cheryl, you are not alone. We have a full board of people that I dare say are in the same situation as you. Thank you so much. And we really hope that it does get easier for you. But unfortunately, Jono, I don't know whether it will or not. We know that cost of living is front and center for the budget. We know that it's for both elections that are coming up. But as Cheryl just said as well, so she's dipping into her savings for her deposit. So she's lucky enough to have those savings there, admittedly. But that's part of what is going to be announced tomorrow as well, that maybe there'll be a 2% deposit that's needed for people that want to buy a home. Because the fact is, if you're renting and you do want to buy a home, how are you going to save for a deposit? It's almost impossible.
Well, that's kind of the next step. And I think a lot of people are just struggling to find a rental property and then pay for the rent. And then after that, they think, oh, well, then I'll start thinking about buying a home. But it's you kind of got to walk before you can run. And a lot of people aren't even walking at this stage.
Well,
so
that's it. And it's, as we said, it's this middle ground. It's the everydayers. It's you and I. And then we haven't even discussed the onflow effects that will have to those that are already at risk. We know that there is a growing number of older women that need housing. We know that we have a population where homelessness is not getting any better. So if you start to add in the middle income earners are needing all of this assistance, what happens to those that already need that assistance? The text here is saying, thank you so much for discussing this. Not everyone who rents is in the social housing category. I really want to listen to this program. Emma Chivel O'Lynn is, well, someone that's been in this category as well and has had to reach out for help for the first time. Emma, welcome. Tell us a little bit about what happened to you.
Well, first of all, thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate you. Looking at this topic, I guess you'd say. I was having a really, really hard time finding a rental house. We applied for over 300 properties. I think it ended up being like 320 something. And we were accepted for maybe 15 inspections. It was just ridiculous. We were having people, other people that we were talking to there saying, look, I'll offer you a year's rent in advance, as you were talking about before. Someone else said that. And how am I meant to compete with that? So I just don't understand how people are expected to do that. So I actually consider myself lucky because I don't have kids. If you have kids, I don't understand. All power to you. I don't understand how you are actually handling this at the moment, because we were speaking to a lot of other people, obviously, because there's a big queue of people when you go to try to go to the inspections. Some people were living in their cars. They were working two jobs. Some people were actually trying to bribe the real estate agents. We saw a whole heap of stuff like this happening. It's overwhelming just even thinking about it again.
So you had to reach out for help for the first time. How did that play out?
So I was seeing a counsellor through Mentis Assist, and she actually recommended a place called Launch Housing. And I cannot express how much that they helped me. Just even their constant telling me not to give up, because I thought, okay, I've got to move out of the house that I was in, so I'll give it maybe 3 months of looking for a new rental, And yeah, that didn't really turn out as well as I thought. I had no idea that this rental house crisis was happening until I was actually put in the middle of it.
And because sometimes you can be lucky enough to rent a house for a long time. And you're right, Emma, it's not until you then move that you realise that there is a rental crisis. Emma, stay with us because you just mentioned Launch Housing. Well, Bevan Warner is the CEO of Launch Housing and is with us as well. Bevan, the sort of work that Launch Housing does is generally, up until relatively recently, it's been for those that are really at risk, maybe those that have experienced domestic violence, those that have generational homelessness, maybe some drug and alcohol issues. But now we're talking about another whole cohort of people that are needing the assistance from groups like Launch Housing, like Emma, who are waged working and have always managed to find themselves a house and get by, that now need your help.
Yes, well, we need to understand that there is a housing crisis that's affecting middle Australia, as you say. Everyone can see that house prices have gone crazy, and finding a stable, secure place to rent for someone on a low income or an insecure work is almost impossible. Well, we need to ask the question, who's benefiting and is it sustainable? In the short term, it's benefiting homeowners and people who are paying off a home, but it's penalising renters and people trying to buy who can no longer afford a deposit. And what that means is middle income earners are competing in the private rental market against low income earners, offering more rent in advance, and Emma mentioned incentives or bribes, and those sorts of things are happening in the rental market right now every day that are pushing people to the brink. It's a bit like a dam. Water keeps pushing up towards the dam and eventually the dam bursts. And we've got, I mean, the government's own research institute says there's 1.5 to 2 million people in Australia who are on the brink of homelessness, and that's all to do with unaffordable rents and a housing market that's gone crazy. I mean, house prices have increased 10 times the paces of wages in the last year alone.
Well, Bevan, I'm interested to know what the solution is, and I'm happy to hear from you on this, Emma, as well, because we've got a text here saying something that would be helpful would be the government looking at a restarting payment after separation or divorce, much like the first home owner's grant. And we've seen some announcements today about making it easier for people to buy their first home. What do you think the answer is, Bevan?
Well, we need to start with a change of attitude that says rampant house price growth and rental unaffordability is a problem for all of us, not just the people who are in that invidious position. Because in the long term, if boomers take all of their wealth into retirement and expect a smaller workforce of renters in insecure work to keep paying taxes that will deliver a first-class health system as we age in our homes, then when other people don't have one, that's just not going to happen, right? So a rising tide of inequality is not good for anyone, and it won't end well. So we need a change of attitude. So this conversation needs to say, that's not okay. We're heading in a direction that's unsustainable and it's going to be ugly. Solutions take time, so let's implement them now. Mm. The first thing is we need subsidies for low-income people to be able to afford to rent and to be secure and stable in a home. To do that, we can increase the rate of Commonwealth Rent Assistance and widen its scope. And we can also raise the rate of new starts so that people can afford to actually rent. At the same time, incentives in the tax system and the way in which we tax and spend, so governments have a role here, should increase the supply of social and affordable housing. And when we think about house price growth, let's look at the Reserve Bank's task. Their task is to keep inflation in check at between 1% and 3%, and they do all of this stuff to do that because we think that's good. Why don't we think about house price growth as being stable and predictable and in line with inflation, and take all the pressure and the volatility out of the system and think about housing as, well, everyone needs to have a home first before someone has a second.
Yeah, there's lots of texts coming in, similar things, saying, you know, you've got to talk about negative gearing. But I feel like, you know, we have been talking about that for a really long time. Not a lot ever changes. We will, in just a moment, you know, we'll hear from some changes that employers are making, almost going back to the old system of employers offering accommodation for their employees. It used to have happen within the government sector quite a lot. You know, just look at the SEC or police officers or whatever it may be. That's something that's now going to be happening at a hospital in the Bass Coast, even within the world of agriculture. But Sonia's in Anglesey and she sent this message saying, we live on the Surf Coast. We've recently adapted a part of our home to make an affordable space for a young person to live in. It's well below rental rates. We urge other people to consider doing the same. It's heartbreaking and wrong that young people can't afford to live in the town that they grew up in and care about. Sonia in Anglesey, if I could give you a big cuddle right now, we would totally do that because people are being pushed out of where they grow up. Locals are being pushed out of areas. You know, there's a lot of discussion around the role that short stays and Airbnbs have to do with that as well. But Bevan, would you like to see just more community action, more Sonias in Anglesey saying, well, I've got space here, maybe I can find a way to let someone else live here as well?
Absolutely. I think it needs a whole community effort and you know, governments change their policies in relation to what they see the community being concerned about. And I think we have to acknowledge, a bit like the climate crisis, we have a housing crisis. If we don't stabilise prices and rents and provide safety and security for everyone to know where they're going to sleep at night, and as you say, the example of people making adjustments in their own circumstances to create a space for their neighbour, it's a community-minded attitude. We need to see housing as something that the community needs to get right for everyone rather than something where I'm okay, so I'll look after myself and sort of be quietly cheering on price growth in the housing market that's actually going to be a long-term fail for all of us.
And it is, I think it's a cultural change as well that you're talking about there, Bevan. Thank you so much for your thoughts this morning. Let's go to Emma Chevelle-O'Lynn again. You were just listening to Bevan Warner, the CEO of the organisation that you said helped you when you really needed help. But what do you think the solution is to this problem of rental stress?
Well, the only thing, obviously, I'm not a professional in that sort of area or anything like that, but the only thing that I can really think of that impacted my struggle the most was probably people being allowed to offer a year's rent in advance on top of the normal rent. So maybe we could stop that from happening. I don't know how that would happen. Maybe illegal, maybe. That's the only thing I can think of. Like, Launch Housing actually ended up making a spreadsheet for me and they're helping me out, and that's how we know that I applied for over 300. We were calling up the real estate agents, both them, Launch Housing and I, and trying to get some feedback, and we asked, why are we being rejected? And there was no reason apart from the amount of people that were applying. There's just such a lack of housing at the moment in Melbourne. The only other thing I can think of is that maybe the government can, build, instead of building more houses, they abandon buildings. Mm. They can actually, look at some of the abandoned buildings around Melbourne. And
yeah, there's lots of similar ideas here. And so you found somewhere secure to live now, Emma?
So initially, through Launch Housing, they helped me find a house. It was not a great house, but it was a house. we weren't even there for a year because I've got a roommate here. Weren't even there for a year when the landlord decided that they wanted to sell the house. So then we had to look for another house. But we found somewhere now. So.
Oh, good. Okay. Oh, Emma, look, thank you for sharing your story. We really appreciate it. Hopefully you get to stay in that rental for as long as you need.
Hopefully. But if I could just say one thing, it's just if you are in the position where you need help, please do reach out. It is so overwhelming and having to apply to so many different real estate agents and getting rejected again and again and again. Launch Housing's great if you can get a hold of them, but do try to reach out to someone because you will need the help.
Emma, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Emma Chevelle-O'Lynn, she reached out to Launch Housing, who helped her. Jono, so many texts, impossible to keep up with them. Two here that I want to highlight, though. One saying, wouldn't it be great to have a rent-to-buy program? And I know that we've covered that on this program before, whether or not that's possibly something that this state needs to explore more. And another, and I've lost it now with the hundreds of texts that are coming in, but I'll simplify it. And it was an 85-year-old person was renting somewhere for over 20 years, then had to move out of that house and now has had to find somewhere new on a pension at 85 years of age. So what chance is that person going to have when we hear that people are going in offering more than, you know, $100 more a week, 12 months in advance? What happens to someone that's been in that same rental for 20 years?
Yeah, well, you think, it's not going to end well, is it? But as soon as, just going back to that suggestion around rent to buy, those three words to me, when I hear them, I think there's a lot of stigma around them, because I think of, you know, when people go into those rent to buy places for a fridge or white goods or whatever, and then they get hit with these massive interest rates.
But it works. It actually works overseas. It's a proven model, and there are some people within this state that have been advocating for it for a really long time, because what it does is it gives you stability. It means that you, and everybody wins out of it. You know, you have someone that's taking care of that property that they're living in because they think that one day they have the potential to own it. Yep. You don't have a high turnover, and it's a win-win. It's a proven model.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's one potential solution. Let's have a chat with Robin in Wonthaggi. Morning, Robin. What's your situation?
Good morning. Oh, look, I'm 70 years old. I've just turned 70, and I've shifted five times in 4 years because their landlords have sold their property and had to move out each time. And the cost and the frustration of it all. I've been couch surfing the last two places I've lived in, and it's just a shocking thing. I'm on a pension. I cannot afford rent. I'm looking for cows because I do work 2 days a week in cows. I'm travelling from Wonthaggi to cows at the moment. It's nothing. I mean, you go against 100 different people going for one house if it's even a little bit cheaper. Mm. But, yeah.
Robin, I'm so sorry to hear that. And we know that, you know, when we heard from some of our younger callers today, we know that that onflow effect will affect women like you, older women. It's the largest growing cohort of homelessness that this state has. And
I mean,
unfortunately, you're a living example of that.
And I just didn't have a home. I didn't own a home. So I've been renting all my life and working full time. I've paid my taxes and I end up like this. It's just ridiculous.
And just tell us about the situation with couch surfing. What's that like for you day to day?
Oh, look, it's really horrible. You feel like you're intruding, you know. It's family, but it's just horrible. I haven't got my own space, and it's really hard. At my age, it's really hard.
It just doesn't seem right, does it, Robin?
No.
And when we talk about, you know, who can put their hand up for social housing, is that something that you think you're eligible for, and is that even vaguely a solution for you?
Well, it is vaguely a solution. I've had my name down since 2011 or something that. But they said it was on the wrong list because it wasn't a priority and I'd never get a house when I found out about all this. And so they put me on the priority list, but there's still a couple of years wait, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Robin. The things that I've noticed too between you and one of our previous callers from Torquay is it's the coastal areas. It's around Phillip Island and the Surf Coast where that pressure is really being felt of people trying to rent. And I think that's because they're great holiday areas as well and people have moved from Melbourne to the country. But look, fingers crossed you can find something soon, Robin.
Good on you, Robin. We wish you all the best. Renee in Cressy is saying here, renting. Some people can't even rent in the country towns they were born in. You've just talked about buying a house and investors buy a house for $20,000 over asking price. It puts us out of the picture. It's a crazy time with no real rules being followed or policed. So looking at some of those solutions as well, it's affecting everyone, Jono, from the city to the country, from coastal areas to inland. It's really affecting everyone at the moment. It feels like we've known about this for so long, but now the horse has bolted that we need two sets of solutions. Yeah, we need long-term, but we need something now as well.
It's. I think the root cause is Australians' love affair with property and property investment. That's when you, when you boil it all down, we love to invest in property. And that's
the divide between rich and poor that can do that now has become so great. It's just you can have a love affair with property, but only as the cohort of who can buy them is getting smaller but richer.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And some suggestions around what we can do about this on the text line. So how about share houses? And Rish, we have done shows previously on multi-generational living and things like that, particularly in inner city areas. This one says usually sharing in groups of 4 to 5 is much less expensive. There's not feasible if there are lots of kids involved or for singles or 1 or 2 kids is the way many of us manage this for years, says this text message.
And we'll speak to a woman that's done some research into that, and that is growing. I mean, whether or not it's the right solution, do you want to be sharing with another family? Do you want to be house sharing when you're in your 70s? Maybe you do, but that is something that I think we do need to rethink in this state. Yeah. I think we've always thought you should just be able to have your own little place to call home, and maybe that's not possible anymore.
Yeah. Well, maybe we do need to look at that again. But there are some common threads coming here as well. I mean, you're talking about this problem, rental stress, affecting everyone in Victoria and the ripple effects of that. But what I'm hearing is that it's most acutely being felt in those coastal regions. And also that demographic that you were talking about, older women feeling the ramifications of this maybe a little bit more so.
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
And we're talking about rental stress. Is social housing the solution? Surely all of us that are feeling rental stress at the moment cannot throw our hand up and be eligible for social housing. So there has to be other solutions that are thrown into the mix. Jan Child is the CEO of Bass Coast Health. Jan, when we're talking about the rebuild and the work being done on the Wonthaggi Hospital, you're looking at building accommodation for those that will work there. Now, this is something that I guess was done decades ago. And we've had a caller before, you know, from Wonthaggi, a 70-year-old woman that couldn't find anywhere to live. Is this something that is the future, do you think, for the Bass Coast region, for employers to think about housing their employees?
Absolutely. And I did hear the stress in her voice, and I know that it's a real pressure point around here because of, you know, the attraction to the beautiful part of the world we live in. But for us, you know, we need to bring surgeons and doctors and specialists down here to serve our community. And many of those people come from Melbourne. A lot of the specialty people who need to stay overnight need accommodation. So currently Bass Coast Health rents a large number of properties in Cowes and Wonthaggi just to be able to accommodate the staff so that we can provide the service. And we've had to do that now for several years because if we don't do that, you know, they really struggle to get those properties on their own. So we'll have 4 or 5 doctors and nurses sharing a house together to actually just make sure that we can provide our service. And to date, we've got probably 23 houses, 55 rooms that we're working on every night of actually providing accommodation. Otherwise, we couldn't provide the service.
And are those rooms available to all employees of Bass Coast Health?
Yeah, we've had a bit of a demand recently with staff who have been affected by COVID and needed to isolate. And so we've had to probably more demand for our single room premises. But we do try to prioritise based on, you know, making sure that we can meet the clinical demand. And we are in the process of planning to build our own staff accommodation at the back. We did used to have very old accommodation. It wasn't fit for purpose. So we're in the planning stages now to build new staff accommodation, and we've sold some of our own properties to be able to do that so that we can provide sort of motel-type units for people.
It's almost a step back to how it used to be done, Jan, isn't it? I mean, I wonder whether that's something when a lot of government industries, housing was included, and I wonder whether if there was a way to go back to that model, because there are a lot of government employees, you know, the two of you talking, not saying that we want government housing, but there are a lot of sectors within the government that could potentially have homes provided for them. I wonder how much stress that would take off the rest of the community.
Well, I trained as a nurse in Wimmera at Horsham, and I grew up in a town called Surviston, and, you know, I had to travel to go to work. And accommodation was provided for me as part of that package. We had nurses' homes. Nowadays, you know, they're not as contemporary to have nursing home, nurses' homes for staff or for other people. And certainly at Wonthaggi, we've made the choice to go back to providing accommodation because we know it's one of the recruitment factors that will determine whether somebody comes and works here or not.
And is that just for the highly desirable professions? So, you know, your surgeons and nurses and professionals, or can anyone, can someone who works as a cleaner at Bass Coast Health get one of these rooms?
We've certainly accommodated everybody in our rooms, and cleaners are as highly desirable nowadays as surgeons, I promise
you.
You know, every part of workforce is short in the country, and accommodation is just one of those levers that we have to be able to try and secure people for their service. And, you know, we make sure that it's clean, attractive, pleasant for them to stay in so that they want to come back. And that's part of our sort of recruitment strategy for the rural health service.
Is this something that you think more hospitals could potentially do? How simple was it when you were in the planning process at the moment, but getting these plans approved, getting everybody on the same page, was it something that everybody thought was a good idea and could others follow suit?
Well, I think other regional services do this. You know, we're a bit following others as well, but certainly our board made the decision, you know, several moons ago that we needed to invest in staff accommodation because we know that it's one way that we can retain our workforce. And so, you know, we've got luckily some property out the back that we'll be able to build on, and, you know, we're about to go to tender for that piece of work. And, you know, hopefully that will mean that we'll be secure for some part of the future. And I think everybody probably needs to think about how they can accommodate their staff now just to be able to make sure we can bring them into our regional towns.
Jan, thank you so much for telling us about that. And I think you're right. I think everyone is going to have to start thinking proactively. But thank you for having a chat.
No worries. See you.
Jan Child, CEO of Bass Coast Health, and they're just rebuilding the Wonthaggi Hospital and including staff quarters in there. So 23 houses, 55 rooms. It's kind of back to the future there. And I reckon, Rishi, lots of employers will have to start doing that as well.
And you're right in that it affects coastal areas differently. Here's just another text saying, I nearly contributed to the problem during the pandemic and ongoing lockdowns. We contacted every possible agency to look for a seaside rental for just 6 to 12 months. We even considered long-term rental of a holiday house. I was told by so many people that they've already done that, and that was all metro people wanting to get out of lockdowns. And people are seriously paying holiday rates long term. We were amazed and we bowed out. People are prepared to pay so much. Coastal locals just don't stand a chance. And that is so true. We know, especially not just the Bass Coast, but the Surf Coast as well.
Apollo Bay.
Yeah. It's a
all
huge
those
problem.
Places. And yeah, and people trying to run businesses there, trying to get access to staff, but the staff have nowhere to live or nowhere to rent. Let's have a chat with Chris in Hastings now, another coastal area. G'day, Chris.
G'day.
Now, you're a real estate agent. What's your experience?
Well, you know, we have, we manage hundreds of properties. We do try and emphasise with a lot of our elderly tenants, and if they have to move on, We try and find them a place rather than someone we don't know. But apart from that, one of the problems that we're seeing is the new reforms the state government brought in recently has triggered a shortage of supply. What's been happening is landlords ring up the agent, say, you know, do I hear that they now can, you know, paint the walls and do things without my permission? Yes, that's correct. Well, what's it worth? That's the first thing they ask is, well, what's it worth? When you tell them, they nearly fall off their chair because the property's worth 20 or 30% more than they thought. So I go, well, if that's the case, when the tenant gets notice, just sell it. And that's what's been happening.
Yeah, so you've got fewer and fewer people owning more and more properties. Good on you. Thank you. Another text here saying, Rochelle and Jono, to evict an 85-year-old person in their home after 20 years is nothing short of abuse. That's from Annie. And some of the other things that we were hearing in some of the coastal areas, Jono, is that people are only getting offered 9 and 10-month leases as well. And you can guess the months that they're not allowed to live there. It's those high turnover months.
December, January, February.
Absolutely. So, you know, they're... the rules do need to be tightened. I mean, to offer someone a 10-month lease, but then people are so desperate, unfortunately, they say yes.
Yeah.
So therein lies the problem. It just becomes okay and it becomes the norm.
Yeah, and I remember renting houses a while ago, and there were people that were putting in extra money. They'd say, I'd pay, you know, if it was $200 a week or whatever, they'd say, well, we'll pay you $215 a week. And then they would get the house and you'd be like, well, why? And you'd never find out that you'd been outbid. But that is just, that's some of the things going. We've actually heard this morning that there are little sweeteners given to real estate agents and landlords. So there's a lot of this stuff that goes on.
And many techs saying, have you spoken about putting limits on the number of Airbnb properties in areas, reduces rental options? That's a huge problem as well. So, you know, whether or not laws need to be tightened around Airbnbs. Let's have a chat to Renee Pye. She's a business manager at Perilla Premium Potatoes and Zorilla Fresh. Now, you're a South Australian company. You're quite a large company, but you've taken a section of your area, I think the area where you wash potatoes, and you've relocated that. But as a result, in order to keep families working for you, Renee, you're building homes for your employees. Is that right?
Yeah, we actually purchased a block off of the community. They owned like quite a large block just out the back of Lamoureux. And then there's also some in Pinneroo as well. So we've taken them and subdivided them, and we've built around, in total we'll be building 27 houses for our employees to attract them to the area.
And so this is just over the South Australian border, so you're in South Australia. But has that worked? Have you got workers to come because you've built that accommodation?
Yeah, definitely. I think, so we built like a new packing shed in the Mallee region, and we saw a massive gap in accommodation, I mean quality accommodation for people to go and live in and sort of attract their families to as well. So that's why we decided to build the houses to create that package deal, you know, where they're getting a salary, but we've also got new houses for them for their families to live in as well.
That's a huge commitment. There's a text here saying a company years ago looking for accommodation for employees in rural Victoria purchased a closed pub in a nearby small town. They renovated it and it solved their problems. Renee, this is really going a step beyond. It's quite incredible. It would cost you. So I dare say it would be coming out of your profit somewhat, but does it also attract the sort of employers that you want, you know, and long people that know, okay, well, if they're going to commit in me, then I will commit to them? Is it a bit win-win for you?
Yeah, definitely. We sort of did, you know, the bat on doing these houses so that we would get those long-term committed employees that we had. You know, people that got their families into the schools and they became friends and got involved in the community so that they would then, stay there long term. And we're hoping it works. It's been about 12 months now, so hopefully it continues on for the next 20 years.
So you've got 17 houses built currently. You've got 20 more to come this year. 10 more to come this year. Does it feel as if you are building a community from the ground up?
There's definitely a great community already in the Mallee region, which have been so forthcoming with the people that we've also brought to the community. But, we're definitely building our own community for our business as well, which is really good.
Would it be beneficial? I'm just thinking, you know, if there are other employees around a similar size to yours that are listening to this right now, be thinking, gosh, how can I do that? But maybe it's too unaffordable to be able to start. I mean, would you like to see government initiatives so that more employers can build homes and do what you're doing, Renee?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think it's a great way to attract more people to regional Australia instead of, you know, going into the cities and living in the cities. And just getting government support for that makes it a lot easier. I mean, the project has cost us more than what we thought, but it's also been great for our business in attracting the employees that we want to stay long term.
Now, I've just got this image in my head, right, of the company houses and you grow potatoes, of course, and there'd have to be a baked potato night or a chip night or something, all the families getting together. Is that what happens, Renee?
On Fridays, we do baked potatoes.
I knew
happy
it.
Happy days. You had me at baked potatoes.
But, plenty of potatoes are eaten.
Oh, very good. Good on you, Renee. Thank
you. Wonderful.
Renee Pye. Thanks, with guys. A fitting name for someone who works in the food industry. Thank you. She's the business manager at Perilla Premium Potatoes and Zarella Fresh. They're just over the South Australian border, and you would feel a bit like you'd be, because the workers are working at the same place. They're living in the same place. There'd be a real little community there. Let's have a chat now with Roz from Aubrey Wodonga. Morning, Roz.
Hello.
What did you want to say?
Morning. I just wanted to say that it's not just coastal areas, because you seem to keep referring to that. But, I mean, I'm okay. I mean, I am one of those older women. I was a survivor of domestic violence a few years ago. I'm in my 60s. I was left with absolutely zilch to my name. But I managed to secure rental a few years ago now, and that'll be me for the rest of my life. But as far as rental shortage, you cannot get a place here to rent. I've got a friend with two little boys looking for a place. She's just despairing. I spoke to a professional couple the other day who moved here because they thought they'd get something here much more easily than in the city.
Yeah, right, they can't.
Nothing. If anything, it's worse.
What are the tactics that you're hearing that people use to get a place? And we've heard about sweeteners for real estate agents and adding extra rent or saying, I'll pay rent for a year. Have you come up against that?
Oh, I've just heard people say that, but really I don't know anyone firsthand that's experienced that, but you'd have to think it goes on, really.
Yeah, it's been going on forever, hasn't it? I think it's just been ramped up
especially in a
more
small
now.
Area, it's who knows what real estate agent, all of that sort of thing. But yeah, that aside, I mean, it's just extraordinary, and it doesn't show any signs of getting better.
I think you're right, Roz. I think that's what it's just, it feels a little bit overwhelming at the moment. We're so glad that you found somewhere as well, though. Glenn in Eltham says on text, many farmers years ago had a house on the property for the, in inverted commas, married couple who worked on the farm. I know this still happens in New Zealand. I wonder if it happens now. And another Jono saying, my adult daughter and her boyfriend cannot get a rental property, so my husband and I are taking on more debt trying to help them buy a house for them to live in. So it's not just the kids that are under stress. Let's have a chat with Josephine. She's in Glen Waverley. Hi, Josephine.
Hi. Hi. Yes, I've had a student housing apartment in the city for 18 months. It's been nearly empty. And, you know, it's just very distressing.
I guess you would usually have international students in there, would you, Josephine?
Yep. And I think they're probably studying online now.
I guess that's the flip side of this, isn't it? And I was reading today about, you know, how to make Melbourne the most livable city again and getting people back into the CBD and people that can live there. Do you think that we could find a way to open up accommodation like what you have in the CBD to others that are struggling to get somewhere to live?
I'm sure, but it's only, you know, tiny apartments. Turn around twice and you know, just about fill the apartment. But it's ideal for, you know, young people that are working full-time or, you know, whatever in the city, and not only students.
And you can't find anyone to rent it?
No. It's been on the books for 18 months now.
Gosh, okay. That's interesting, isn't it, to think, you know, whether or not living in the CBD, why are people not moving in there? If that was obviously a solution, but maybe it is just that they're too small and the way that they were built and designed. Most people think, well, I can't physically and reliably live in them unless you're a student.
I wonder if COVID has had anything to do with that. I know, you know, there was that widespread migration from urban areas to country areas because of COVID. I wonder if the CBD is kind of ground zero of that. But I do feel like people are back in the CBD. I was in Melbourne on the weekend.
It's
and it
busy.
Felt like,
it's picked up.
Yeah,
it really
like there's
has.
Heaps of people there.
Kaz is in Bright. Hi, Kaz.
Hello, how are you today?
Good. What do you want to say?
Oh, look, I'm a town planner and
Oh, Kaz, your phone's gone a little bit wonky
robot.
Donkey on us. Yeah, we might get you to sort of, can you just turn around or do
better?
Something?
Is that better now?
That's a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I'm a town planner and I run a consultancy from Bright, and I've been working a lot in the affordable and key worker housing space over the last few years because it is such a big problem across the state, across the country. And I just really wanted to pick up on something that you talked about earlier around the negative gearing and the Reserve Bank and so on, and really highlight that from a professional perspective, it's very complex dealing with the three different levels of government because they're all responsible for different parts of the jigsaw puzzle. And that's been a real barrier to being able to solve affordable housing and key worker housing problems in small towns like I live in.
That's really, really interesting. And we've had this conversation previously around, are we over-governed in Australia? Do we have too many levels of government? You would probably say yes, Kaz.
Oh, look, I don't think I'd go that far. But what I would say is that my experience is that each level of government's got slightly different objectives. And I think with an issue like this, each level needs to work collaboratively and together to solve the problem. So, you know, to solve the issue, we need to look at what's happening at that federal level with the financial levers. We need to look what's happening at the state level with the funding of housing. And then we need to look at the local level around the rules and what you can and can't do.
Yeah, and the rules are a really big part of it. And so many people are saying, just tighten the rules and get people to stick by them. Kaz, thank you. Let's quickly try and fit in Sophia Mileson. She's a lecturer in urbanism at the School of Architecture, Design and Planning. And Sophia, for a long time now, you've looked at thinking outside the square when it comes to housing affordability and how we can all just have a safe and secure roof over our head. Do we need to look at sharing more, not just multiple generational living, but just looking at other ways that we can share the one house?
Yeah, a great way to start. So what we're seeing, and I mean, I will just phrase it in, I guess, situated in that perhaps not everybody wants to share a house, but what we're seeing is an increase in share housing driven partly by these unaffordable rents and unaffordable home ownership. So we're beginning to see people in their 30s and 40s and 50s still share housing. And this is sort of continuing into old age, so people, retired people, you know, up in their 50s, 60s, 70s. So I'm not sure whether everyone wants to share, but there's definitely a financial need to. And for those who like a more communal way of living, it's actually quite a good option.
Is this more common in other countries, share housing at greater levels than in Australia?
No, I wouldn't say so. We're seeing it rise in Australia. We also see it in, say, countries with like similar properties market, housing markets to Australia, so the UK and Ireland. And again, it's pushed by housing affordability challenges. But there are some much more, I guess, organised ways of living into shared arrangements and what we see in Scandinavian countries around cooperatives, which are, you know, have been around for decades, but are really...
It's always the Scandinavian countries that, you know, that always think outside the square.
I know, always the Scandinavian ones.
They've got the solutions
really
for everything.
Contract.
Oh, and the blonde hair and the blue eyes at the same time. Hey, look, there's a text here that says, I think we need to switch back to house sharing and house sharing for older and single people too. There are many single households in this country. That's from Cell. Mm. And there's been quite a few texts coming in along those lines of, there's one person living in big households or, you know, we need to, and renting out rooms and all of that. And again, this isn't new. It's sort of going back to how we once did it.
Yeah. I mean, this whole, you know, the whole owner-occupied single-family home is a very post-war thing in Australia. So we have lots of examples of much more cooperative shared living in terms of particularly multi-generational before that. And I think it's sort of, you know, two things have combined, the sort of ideology of home ownership that's being a single family-owned home, and now home is also an inside of investment, which has been driving up the housing crisis. So people are looking for alternatives, and sharing's a great option.
Is it the type of housing stock as well? I mean, we heard earlier that there are some apartments, student apartments in the city that are admittedly very small that just aren't being filled.
Yeah, completely. So stock plays into that as well. And I think, you know, particularly in Australia, we've always considered that apartments are for singles or, you know, couples. So they're never really considered to be sort of a family would live in them. So what we're starting to see now, and particularly in, say, New South Wales, and I know Victoria is doing similar things, are sort of thinking about the way they build apartments with this idea that families will live in there and will live in there for a long time. So particularly, I think New South Wales is a great example of lots of apartments having been built very quickly and to very poor standard, which means not always a great place to live.
Yeah. Sophia, thanks so much for your time and your insights.
No problem. Thank
you. Sophia Marlson. She's a lecturer in urbanism at the School of Architecture, Design and Planning. Jono, everything from changes to Airbnb laws to negative gearing to employers building houses for employees to sharing with more people, tighter rules, changes to Airbnbs. Where do we start? I'm overwhelmed.
Well, the thing, I am a little bit too, but the thing that stands out for me from today is just some of the stories, like Lisa saying that she's been in 18 houses in 20 years just because that churn of rentals is so great. And some employers building houses, you know, building 23 houses and 55 rooms because it's just so hard. And I know I did say that problem is acutely being felt in coastal areas, but it is being felt across Victoria as well. There's lots and lots of areas where it is being felt, and it's, I don't know, I wonder whether it'll be addressed in the budget.
I think it absolutely has to be. That's it for the Conversation Hour today. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget you can always subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. You can go to the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts, and that way you'll never miss an episode and you can share it with your friends and family. And if you have an idea or someone or something you want us to talk about, you can email us, conversationhour@abc.net.au. We always read those emails. Take care and speak to you soon.